Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
When Dr. Ernest Holmes, who is the founder of this teaching, if you're here for the first time, began talking about his beliefs almost 100 years ago, when he began laying out the foundation for this philosophy, which is called religious science or the science of mind, he was very clear in his own mind that the last thing the world needed was another religion. So that's why he never called this religion, nor do I call it myself. I call it a spiritual practice, whatever name you want to apply is fine. It was his feeling, Dr. Holmes's feeling, that even if we accept the fact that many people have been helped by their own particular religion, their own particular way of dealing with God as they understood God, the amount of conflict and pain and death and war and destruction and persecution and all the phobias and all these things unleashed upon the world by those people who insisted that their religion was the only right religion made it pretty clear to any truly spiritual person that when it comes to God, our similarities are a lot more important than our differences. All right? So that's what he focused on. What he also realized was, as he started getting into this idea of how do you find the similarities between all the different teachings and religions, when it comes to our many different religious stories, like Easter or Purim, is that how it's pronounced? Someone who was raised Jewish, that was last Wednesday, Passover coming up next month, Ramadan, the Muslim festivals, whatever. Even though the people and the stories and the language that are used may be different from one another because they came up from different cultural backgrounds, the spiritual truth that these stories represent has to be the same. It has to be the same because if there's only one God, then there has to be only one truth. And we all must be, because we are created out of that, part of that one truth, no matter who we are, male or female, black, white, yellow, green, gay, straight, every religion, every nationality, every single person, whoever was or ever will be. So that means, if you think, was that for me? Oh, if you think about it, that when it comes to holidays or holy days, as that name started out, like the one we're celebrating today, we should not be celebrating some historical event where God is expressing a preference for one group of people or one religion over another. What all of these holidays across the spectrum should be a celebration of is whatever spiritual truth these ideas and these stories represent. Because if we can look at these stories, all the different stories that way, then we can all share in each other's celebrations. Like a Jewish Seder, if you've never been to one because you were raised Christian, it's a beautiful thing. Or an Easter sunrise service, if you were raised Jewish. Or a Muslim call to prayer, if you're not familiar with that. And we can do this, we can share other people's spiritual strength peacefully and openly and tolerantly, not by blowing up airports and train stations, while recognizing that we are all celebrating both our shared divinity and our shared humanity in our own unique way. We can have our stories, but we can honor the stories of other people. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to take one story, obviously the Easter story, one of these traditions, but instead of talking about it in the old-fashioned traditional way with the passion and the suffering and the glorious ending, I'm going to talk about it in a slightly less dramatic way. Because true spiritual understanding doesn't need to be complicated or dramatic or miraculous. In fact, the ability to understand our oneness with God, with the power that created us, and our oneness with each other, which is a given, it should be the easiest thing in the world. It's something we were all born with, even though we may have forgotten it. So it doesn't need to be pounded into us. It's something we have always known in our heart, which is why we keep looking for these answers in stories outside of us. You see, at some point in our life, doesn't happen to everyone, but for many of you here, I know it did. When and if we start to open up to this inner awareness, whether we start thinking about it from a religious story that we might hear or a sermon from someone that, you know, affected us, or whether some religious or spiritual ritual happens to touch us, or whether it just comes to us in quiet meditation, sitting in your backyard under the trees with the wind blowing through the leaves and the birds singing, this awareness usually comes to us not as a big booming sound or a bright flash of light. It comes as a still small voice from in here, from somewhere in here. And it doesn't come to us from any particular story or any particular religion or one teacher or one book or any of those things. It comes from the universe at large. So when we start putting the meaning behind all of these different stories together, we start looking at the meaning of all of them from every source, and we stop judging and criticizing and categorizing the source and the messenger and the book and the religion and all that stuff. That is when we claim our rightful place as spiritual beings rather than being closed-minded followers of one particular religion. Because that's when we start listening to our own inner truth and God's truth, which just happen to be one and the same, instead of listening to someone else's narrow opinion of what we should believe about God, ourselves, and the world. Now, what is called the Easter story, as many of us who grew up with it, Catholic, Christian, whatever, what we call that story is centered in most people's mind on this one particular character, on Jesus the Christ, also called Yeshua in the original Aramaic. I mean, even if you didn't grow up Christian, you probably know that much. Now, I also realize that there are a few people here who believe that the central character of Easter is the Easter Bunny, okay? But that's not the way most people think of it. However, as a note of historical interest, did you know that the Easter Bunny predates Christianity? The Easter Bunny has been around much longer than Jesus. You see, some of you have heard this story. I repeat it every few years. But the word Easter is not a Christian name. It's actually the name of a Saxon, Northern European, fertility goddess. And they celebrated her festival every spring around the equinox, which was, I think, the 20th of March this year. And they had wild parties and huge celebrations and people making whoopee all over the place, fertility celebration. And this was many, many years before Christianity began. Anyway, during the 2nd century AD, when the new Christian missionaries started going out into areas away from their safe little center there, and they started realizing that people didn't like what they were doing, they decided to hold their different celebrations during celebrations that were being held by some of the pagan groups in the countries that they went to. That way, nobody would notice what they were doing, and they wouldn't get persecuted. So as Christianity became more and more established, these dates remained the same, so the date of the spring equinox became Easter, and they maintained the old name. They did the same thing with Christmas. Now, it just so happens that this goddess, Easter, had an earthly symbol, as most of them did, and that symbol was what? The rabbit. Why? Fertility goddess, right? Makes perfect sense, okay? So that's how the Easter Bunny came about. And people during that time would give each other gifts of colored eggs. That's where it came from. So if you have brunch with some of your friends this afternoon, you can bring that story up and see if you enlighten somebody. But this morning, instead of focusing on the suffering or the death of one particular great spiritual teacher and all the events following that, I want to focus on something that is the larger picture, what we might call the metaphysical picture, which is something much greater than the story that we so often hear. Because if we stop looking at Jesus as a supernatural being who is completely different from us, which is the traditional view, and we begin to look instead at what this great teacher represents in terms of our own spiritual growth, then we've got something that we can use instead of just a story to memorize and some other, you know, reluctant Messiah to worship. So, why, we ask, is this story from 2,000 years ago, how is it relevant to our life today? Because, first and foremost, we have to recognize, and this is what we talk about in this teaching, our life is a reflection of what we believe. Let me say that again. I say it a lot, but I'm going to say it over. Our life is a reflection of what we believe. We are all spiritual beings creating a human experience, just like Jesus did. And a big part of that experience is learning how to create the particular life that we live. All right? Now, you've heard me say that before. Our life, good or bad, happy or sad, successful or unsuccessful, healthy, not healthy, whatever it is, our experiences flow forth and they take form based on our deepest thoughts, beliefs, and opinions, our ideas. So that is the power we have been given in this physical world as spiritual beings. Now, Jesus, as the great teacher as he was, understood this better than most. That's why he kept trying to tell everybody around them that the very best ideas, our very wisest, our most loving, our most creative ideas, every single one of them, at the moment of its conception in our mind, which is where ideas start, is a perfect divine idea, with everything that those words mean. In other words, every good idea contains within it the seed of its own physical creation, just like an acorn has within it the idea of a 100-foot high oak tree. So the question is, here's where people ask about this teaching, if we all have unlimited access to all these wonderful, powerful, divinely inspired ideas that are capable of reshaping our life in amazing ways, then why are so many people in the world so miserable? It's an excellent question. Where do things go wrong? Because most people's lives don't look like they were formed out of a collection of perfect divine ideas. They look like they were formed out of an episode of South Park or Modern Family or something like that. They just do. So what is it that gets in the way? What is it that gets in the way of our most wonderful ideas and keeps them from manifesting in our life? That's a basic core question. That's what we all should want to know. And the answer can be found, among other places, in a slightly different interpretation of the Easter story. So let's get back to this idea of Jesus as an idea or a purveyor of ideas, as one of many divine ideas in the mind of God. So let's think of him not as this one-of-a-kind religious leader, but as an extremely enlightened person bringing excellent ideas into the world. Ideas about unconditional love, universal acceptance, honesty, integrity, creativity, and personal responsibility. Those are pretty spiritual ideas, don't you think? I sure do. These are all the kind of things he talked about all the time in all of his stories, in the parables, the Sermon on the Mount, all the different stories. And if the human race at that time, 2,000 years ago, had listened to this teacher when he spoke and taken these powerful and beautiful ideas as their own and lived them and practiced them with one another, there's a pretty good chance that the world would be a much different place than it is today. Now, there's a reason that we're not saying here, and I hope this doesn't offend anyone, but we're talking from our belief system, where we are not saying that the world should accept this one individual as their one and only personal Lord and Savior. I'm not even going to argue with that idea. That's religion. And we have already seen that religion in that narrow a structure does not work. It separates us. It creates conflict between us. I am suggesting, however, that the world could have been a bit more open to the ideas presented by Jesus and a lot of other great spiritual teachers before or since, and not just similar ideas. If you look at all the teachers, the same ideas. The same ideas from every culture, every era, every spiritual teacher. Love others as yourself. Okay, that's the core idea. And all these other great ideas. Be honest. You know, don't cause trouble. Try not to be try not to be one of those. And if humanity had taken these ideas in their original, purest, non-religious form without adding all of our own individual fears and biases and personal agendas, we could have grown into something far beyond where we are now. That's why Dr. Hones, when someone asked him, once his teachings started getting out, these ideas, somebody asked him if he believed in Jesus, and he said, "I believe every word he said and not a word that was said about him." Very powerful. It's a good answer. Take that, you know, give that for somebody. We could say the same thing about Moses, about the Buddha, about Muhammad, about Mahatma Gandhi, about Dr. King, you know, all of the great teachers, both men and women, because they were people who showed us how powerful a spiritual idea could be. You see, every good idea we have, especially the really, really good, great ideas, starts out pure, perfect, and complete. But the moment we bring that idea into contact with the world, the moment we bring it from the invisible place, wherever ideas come from, into the external visible world, from the spiritual world to the physical world, the world begins to attack it. It happens all the time. The world begins immediately to criticize, doubt, ridicule, minimize, marginalize, and ostracize, that's most of the words I could think of, even our best ideas. Now, the spiritual ideas that Jesus was teaching were no different. And the challenges he ran into were all very familiar, every one of them clearly represented by certain characters in the Easter story. Now, most of us are familiar with those characters by name, but we may not have thought about what they represent. So let me talk about a few of them, because the Easter story is not just about Jesus. It's not. Jimmy Fallon. Nighttime show, any fans, a few here. He's got a routine, he's done it a few times, where he takes a picture, a big news photo, whatever it is, of maybe the Pope or Donald Trump or somebody who's definitely in the news right there, and he holds that up and he goes, look over in the corner, what about this guy? And he starts asking about the people that are not central to it. Well, that's kind of what we're doing here. So first of all, let me start with the easy one. The most positive character in the Easter story, in the whole Christian New Testament, in fact, is obviously, who do you think? Mary, mom, right? Okay, his mother. In Catholic school, we used to call her the BVM. Any Catholics know, remember what that means? The Blessed Virgin Mary? That was shorthand, BVM. The nuns did not like it. Anyway, they didn't like much, anyway. Mary represents something very, very precious. She represents unconditional love and acceptance. She represents the fact that no matter how strange or crazy our ideas may be, there's always someone in our life who loves us, understands us, and wants us to be happy. There's always someone who listens to our crazy ideas and our dreams and laughs when we laugh and suffers and hurts when we do. And nothing we do, no choice we make, no step we take, no vow we break, with credit to Sting, nothing we do can get in the way of their love for us. These people are the foundation of our life. They aren't concerned about our mistakes. They know we're going to make mistakes. They know how powerful we are even when we forget. They always see us in the best possible light even when we feel trapped in the darkness. They're a rock that we can hang on to. That's the role that Mary played in Jesus' life. But there's another part of this. Spiritually, in terms of our consciousness and our ideas, Mary represents our feminine side, which in terms of consciousness is what we call our intuition. Our intuition is the part of our mind that knows when an idea is a good one, that knows when we're doing the best thing, even when the world is screaming at us that we're wrong and we're making a big mistake. So this state of mind of knowing in spite of the world, instead of the Christ consciousness, we'll call it the Mary mind. I like it. Okay. This is the spiritual foundation that we need to stay attached to. We have to stay attached to all the time, no matter how hard things get, because this is where we are grounded. This is where our roots are grounded. We're grounded in this kind of love and support that we never need to question. We just need to accept. That's what Mary represents. Now, the next most important character in the Easter story, to me at least, is Judas, which is surprising to some people because everybody thinks of Judas. He's got the reputation as the bad guy, as the betrayer, the traitor who sold out his Savior for 30 pieces of silver. But I'd like to offer a slightly different perspective. Now, if you happen to read the earlier stories in the New Testament, way before the Easter, Last Supper, and all that other stuff, Judas was actually Jesus' most talented and loyal disciple. He supported his vision, he supported the spread of his teaching, and he especially supported the idea of a kingdom here on earth. But from a spiritual perspective, or a consciousness perspective, since we're talking about ideas, what he was actually doing was supporting the structure of what Jesus was teaching rather than the foundation, the material structure. Or you could say he was focusing on the effect, on specific results and goals and milestones that he expected to be happening instead of focusing on the deeper meaning that the teacher was trying to get across. You see, Judas was a numbers man. And we all know what that means. He was into organization and goals and making lists. He would have been the guy with the iPhone and the Google Calendar standing next to him. No, we can't go there. We're running behind schedule. That's what he would have been done if he were alive today. So he judged people and situations as good or bad, right or wrong. Either you're with us or you're against us. So when things started getting what he thought was out of control and Jesus wasn't doing things the way he thought, he tried to force things a little bit. He figured if he could get his friend back on schedule and back moving to what he said he was going to do, he could get him to take action. But what he didn't understand, the part of the teaching that he missed, was that the most powerful and most important action of all doesn't take place out there. It takes place in here, in our mind and in our heart. So our idea, our dream that we want to create has to be mental and spiritual first if it's going to be going to last, and it has to be grounded in faith in the law. So here's the lesson of Judas. Whenever we have an idea, especially a really, really good idea, our own worst enemy is frequently our own mind. Our own mind. And here's the way it works. Into our thoughts, I'm sure you can identify with this, into our thoughts comes some fabulously creative, inspired, potentially life-changing idea. Anybody here ever have one of those? All right. And what do? Do we nurture it? Do we respect it? Do we let it move us forward? No, no, and no. All right. We immediately try to take charge of how it plays out. We try to control its growth. We insist upon making a schedule with milestones and deadlines that we keep up with. We insist that the whole process has to look a certain way, and woe to anyone who tries to disagree with us. It is my idea, and I am in charge of it. Even though our idea starts out as something spiritual, if we can't control it, we end up killing it. It happens all the time. We sabotage it. We betray ourselves for 30 pieces of silver, for a little bit of security. It happens all the time. So in his own way, Judas was only trying to help, but he ended up killing the thing that he loved the most and making things a lot more difficult than they needed to be. Of course, the idea still survived, even if the person didn't. One more interesting character, and my personal favorite, by the way, is Pilate, the Roman governor. Everybody's familiar with these people, right? Pilate represents the world of tradition and authority and bureaucracy. He doesn't care about dreams or spiritual growth or new ideas. He's only interested in order. In order. On the material level, what he represents is worldly power, which means in the world of authority, he can do whatever he wants. He can have a person crucified or he can let him go. It's totally up to him. But all he really wants to do is to keep things quiet. All he wants to do is have everybody stay in line. He doesn't care if they're happy or not. So he does something very, very interesting. All right. He offers Jesus the option of avoiding all sorts of unnecessary unpleasantness if he'll just stop rocking the boat. Okay. If he'll just go back to his old job as a carpenter. If he'll stop making all these speeches and annoying the powers that be, if he'll just accept that everything's fixed and under control and there's nothing he can do to change it. So he says to him, kind of in an aside, I would think, why not just drop all these crazy ideas and we'll all go home? What do you say? We'll just smooth things over. I mean, that's not a lot to ask. Let's be reasonable here. But Jesus was smart enough to know that Pilate represented the insidious power of the status quo, of the world being fixed and unchanging, what we call race consciousness or race belief, which is the wall we run up against whenever we try to change, whenever we're trying to bring an idea out into the world. You see, our newest and best ideas always bring change, but change always meets resistance because most of the world does not like change. So here's the lesson from Pilate. When we are faced with the world's opposition to change, could be our friends and family, could be our boss, could be anybody, we have several choices. First, we can fight like crazy and bang our head against the wall and try to force everybody else to change. Two, we can shrug our shoulders and just drop the whole thing and go back to our old way of living. Or three, we can keep moving forward, doing whatever we have to do, accepting the challenges and the fear and the danger of the world around us, but not getting caught up in it. We can be in the world, but not of it, which is exactly what the teacher did. Now, for a spiritually grounded person, option number three is the only acceptable option because we know that whatever we fight gets stronger. But we also know we can't go back to our old way. That's why Oliver Wendell Holmes, the great jurist, once said, "A mind once stretched by a new idea can never go back to its original dimension." That's why I've talked to people who come here for a while and they try to go back to their old spiritual teaching. It's very difficult for them because now they're seeing something bigger, not necessarily better, but just bigger. Whenever we're ready to change, when a new idea comes, if we just move forward with what Dr. Holmes calls the faith of God instead of faith in God, what we will find is that the world may be strong, but nothing is more powerful than an idea whose time has come. Now, there are a lot more characters in the Easter story, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on them, but it's easy to see how their behavior applies. We could have Peter, who, remember the story where he was told he was going to deny him three times, and he claimed, "No, I won't, no, I won't," and yes, he did, yes, he did. He sold himself out, so to speak, but then he went back and spent the rest of his life following the teachings he believed. That's perseverance. Mary Magdalene, another key character. She was someone that Jesus had supposedly forgiven a number of years before, so she overcame her past by creating a brand new future for herself. That's self-forgiveness. We got Herod. There's a character. All right. He shows how the mindless world automatically ridicules our ideas out of pure ignorance, but it can't hurt us, so we can actually ignore it. That's self-confidence. There's a couple other quick ones, short ones you might not even remember. Anybody remember someone they call Simon the Cyrenian? He was Cyrenia. He was the person who, when Jesus fell down, they grabbed him out of the crowd and made him help carry the cross. That's a symbol that wherever we are, we can always expect help and support, and our enemies may be the ones who provide it. Great message. That's trust. And even Joseph of Arimathea, I always love that name, Arimathea, okay? He was a person who provided, a wealthy man who provided a tomb for the body after the crucifixion, shows that we never have to worry about our future. Even when we're completely helpless, a resting place will always be available until we are ready to, shall we say, rise again. All right? Now, this whole story, this whole beautiful story, really, as a spiritual metaphor, can tell us a lot more if we stop trying to accept it or explain it historically. Dr. Holmes writes in The Science of Mind, he says, one sentence, he says, "The resurrection is the death of the belief that we are separated from God." That's all. What they call the resurrection is the death of our belief that we are separated from God. In other words, the Easter story isn't about one and only, this one and only person physically dying, and it's not just a Christian story either. It's about all of us. It's about all of us awakening to the power that has always been ours. It's about awakening to our spirituality as we practice our humanity. It's about knowing that our power to choose, whether it's to choose life, to choose love, to choose how we want to live, from this present moment and this moment and this moment and this moment, because the power is always in the present, that is how we continue to move forward or rise again and again, transcending our false beliefs in the world's power or our own limitations. That, my friends, is the only Easter story we need to remember. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. All right. Thank you. All right, let's take a moment. Just relax, comfortable. Take the ideas that resonated with you. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others for later. And let's just recognize this is not one special historical time or day. We don't have to be in church or anywhere else today. We are in the center of where we are in all of our life, in the center of creativity. God exists within us, and we exist within God. We recognize that all the people in our life are there for a reason. We have attracted them into our life, and we can learn from them. Some things we learn help us grow. Some things we learn help us avoid not growing. All the lessons help. There are lessons in every teaching from every teacher, and sometimes the best teachers are not teachers at all. We recognize that as we move through life with an open mind and an open heart, we are able to allow new ideas in and to allow love out. So as we go through the world, expanding our mind and opening our heart, we create an entirely new world, not just around us, but everywhere. And we begin to attract people who support us as we support them. We can hear it when we talk to people, people we don't know. We can hear the ideas and the thoughts, and as we begin to share, we open up a relationship with that person. We can do it in our business, in our companies. We can do it in our organizations. We can do it with our neighbors. We can do it with our family. We have the power to choose how we respond to the world and how we present ourselves to the world. This is the greatest spiritual power we have. And we give thanks for all the great teachers who have shared these ideas with us. We accept these ideas and we do our best to make them our own. Knowing this, I release this truth into consciousness, letting it do its good and perfect work from this moment on. Please join me in saying, and so it is.